It is a little bit out of control. Good morning this morning. Pastor Sam here. Glad you guys are here. And again, welcome online if you're joining us there. Let's start out this morning with our shouts. What do we do?
We love God
and we love others. And what do we say? I love God and I love you. Man, I can't believe we're finishing our fourth week here of Love Song. And I know Pastor Trevor had mentioned that may be a relief to some of you. Me too. You know, I get a little stressed too about this particular topic as well. And I understand, you know, I'm a pretty clear view of myself. I know that, like when we were in Thailand, you know, I'm exactly what like those weirdo tourists kind of look like, a slightly overweight, middle-aged white guy showing up in Thailand and hanging out with kids. And so I recognize that I can be awkward, and it might be awkward in these situations, but I'm so joyful that God is not awkward. He is amazing. And I think that he's even doing stuff through this sermon series. I had at least four different couples this week say that they had talked about foxes and tone in their conversation just this week. So I'll take a handful, but I know that at least four in our church had used that as ammunition against their spouse or against their significant other, like as in the conversation of their day. Hopefully that kind of thing is useful. And so I'm so glad to be part of this. So we've been looking at this romance song that Solomon wrote and the fullness of union that takes place in this marriage relationship. It's described in some of the most splendid poetic language here in all of the entire Bible, and we've got to see it over the last few weeks. I would say that in a world, and even in church, where so many speak of God's special gift of sex with this coldly clinical sort of language or apathetical statistical language, or we feel like we have to just be as like a nurse-like or teacher-like, it's so great to have this this incredible romantic book in the Bible for us to read. Solomon began his rendering of this relationship of the two lovers in their courtship, their longing to be one another, their attraction to one another, their affection expression of language to each other. And eventually they came together and they consummate their marriage, and the groom is extolling his bride's beauty and how amazing she is. Then they talk about some of their insecurities and their fears, and as they're sharing those, the other person is then filling in those gaps and speaking words that would encourage them in those insecurities. And we've seen this as we've been talking about this book in the last 3 weeks. And today we're going to finish our series in the last chapter of the book of Song of Songs. I've saved chapter 8. There's just a couple of verses that are pretty romantic with Valentine's Day is tomorrow. In case you didn't know, guys, you have a chance right now before then to get your card in or whatever gift your spouse is waiting for, or vice versa, ladies, if you've forgotten. Yeah, probably none. And so today's verses we're going to finish off this book in chapter 8, and it's going to give us four pictures of romance. And that it comes to us really fast in about three verses. These four pictures, we're going to see love's guarantee, we're going to see love's permanence, love's passion, and love's value, just in a couple of verses here. And he's going to give us these word pictures for us, and that's pretty incredible. So let's check out the first one. It's love's guarantee. In Song of Songs 8 and 6, it says this. This is actually her talking. She says, "Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm." So this is using this strong imagery of a seal of ownership. In the ancient times, they would put a seal on anything that they either wanted to guarantee, or like if you had a deed to your house, you would, when you bought a property, you'd go in front of the elders, they would sign off on it, and they would put a seal saying, "This is yours now. We guarantee in front of all people that this is your property, and it is yours legally." Or if you were writing a document and you wanted to make sure the person knew it was from you, you would put your seal on it. That was guaranteeing authorship and ownership of the words that were within that document. And so this idea of seal was a big idea. Now, we don't use it probably that much in our language, but for them, this is like big language. He's saying, like, you are the owner, or she's saying, you are the owner of my heart, and I'm the owner of your heart. You're the owner of my arms, and I'm the owner of your arm. And I love this part, and my wife and I, we've always enjoyed this particular idea of ownership. When we first were married, we talked about, like, yeah, now I own you, and you own me, and not in, like, a bad way, but in a really beautiful way. So that, in fact, she has, we always would say, she has 50% ownership of my body and I have 50% ownership of her body. And so like, if she wanted to get a neck tattoo, you know, coming down like this, then she'd actually have to get that approved by me because that's like half my property, you know? And so I say, you know, maybe not the neck tattoo. Well, the shoulder one, we could like block it a little bit or something. Or if I wanted to grow my hair out like a beautiful hippie and be like Fabio, free-flowing hair, she has a say in that. She has a 50% stake in this glamorous body. So lucky her, right? So 50% ownership. So we love this kind of idea. We've used it a lot in our relationship. A seal is a guaranteed of a promised thing. In this case, it's the guarantee of promised love. It's this saying like, I own you, you own me, and there's no going back on this kind of thing. It speaks of permanence, of belonging, of security, a guarantee that their love is genuine and it will last. And she's saying, that's what we have. There's this incredible peace and security that comes from that guarantee. I don't know if you've ever, some of us have bought a house, but you know, it's always nervous when it's in escrow, right? I don't know if you've had houses fall out of escrow, we have. But when it's in escrow, I mean, it's not yours yet, and you're like nervous, and then there's that point where they say, okay, come down, sign the escrow papers, they put your thumbprint, because, you know, it's like, I'll be all legal and that kind of stuff, and you're like, oh, there's this peace that comes with knowing that it's a done deal, a sealed deal, and that house is yours. And this is the same kind of language she's using. She's saying, allow my name to be a seal on your heart, that your heart is mine and I'm yours. And I love how it says, she says it in two ways, and we might have missed it. She says, allow me to be a seal on your heart and on your arm. And that's sort of this strange idiom, but if you think for the ancients, heart wasn't just feelings. Heart was where you took your feelings and your intellect and you made a decision. So heart was like the decision of the command center, the center of you. And then she says, and also on your arm. The arm is the thing that you do. So she's saying, I am sealed to you in all that I think and choose and feel and in all that I do and how I act and what I say and how I follow through on that. And what an incredible picture of the sealed love. Like, that's your love. It's all that you are, who you are, what you think about, and your actions and words and activities beyond that. So, in other words, my feelings, thoughts, actions are all focused on making our love work. That's my seal. That's my guarantee. And so for each of these guarantees this morning, I was trying to think of like a cool song to kind of match to it. And so for this guarantee of love, where it says, place my seal over your heart, I have this song for you. Just a tiny clip. That's a banger, right? I figure two of you know that song, right? Anyone else know Terrence Trent D'Arby other than me? One, two, right? Three. Oh, that's better than... So this one I actually have two songs because I figured most of you don't know that one. And so here's the one that maybe you know, but I didn't know till this week. And I'll ever the one I have been waiting for, king of my heart, body and soul, who I want and who I Okay, so that maybe, you know, Taylor Swift a little better than the Terrence Trent. But so, yeah, that the idea that you're the king of my heart, that my body and soul, that I have signed my name across your heart is our first love's guarantee. The second one is love's permanence. Check out what she says next. So this is directly following. These verses are all in order here. She says, for love is as strong as death. It's jealousy, unyielding as the grave. Like, wow, what an interesting picture, because she's taking these two usually incredibly negative things. Death and jealousy are not like positive words. If we were putting them in positive, negative categories, they are pretty negative, darkish kind of words. And she puts them together to say something beautiful. She's saying love is like death in its persistence, its permanence, and it keeps reaching out. It's total. Death is irrevocable. Once you're there, you're there. Therefore, the bond of love needs to be regarded as permanent. This is love's permanence. Death is strong enough to make every person answer to it. Every single person on this planet dies. Nobody gets out of this thing alive. Let me tell you how it ends. You all get killed in this movie, right? Except, Elijah maybe, right? And Enoch in the Bible, and if Jesus comes before the end of the world. But other than that, death is coming for every single one of us. And she's like, that's how love is. It is so strong that you cannot get out of its grasp. It is permanent and forever, the bond of love needs to be. Death is, and she uses this to say, like, death is like, our romantic love is like that you can't escape it. It will hold on to you permanently. I would say romantic love is the most powerful force in all of humanity. And I say humanity because God's supernatural existence and movement in our heart is a more powerful thing. But within and among human beings, this power, this idea of love is the most powerful thing. And then she says that I have this jealousy, and jealousy that's good and appropriate in the marriage relationships. In the context here, she's saying that I have an unrelenting desire for you and you alone and oneness with you, and that ought not to be shared. And I think about this, it's this idea that romance in our marriage relationship better not have a competitor. And I think Satan always tries to ruin the perfect and the holy and the righteous. That's always his game plan. And I think he does it with sex as well. That's why sex is so focused on by the world, but not sex God's way, sex slightly twisted. Twisted in pornography, where there's no longer a oneness in it, but there's other things involved. Twisted in exploitation and commercialization of people's sexuality. We see it in TV movies, ads all the time. Demeaned in a lack of commitment. Satan and the world, they've twisted it and made it seem like it's no big deal. They've reduced sex to this physical activity of pleasure, really just reducing us to the level of animals. But that's not how God views it. God intended it to be permanent and lasting. See, in the world's view, sex is not singular like death. It's plural. It isn't just a one-time thing. It's given to many people. However, I would say more partners with less commitment does not mean better sex. Christian and non-Christian research demonstrates time and time again that people are most satisfied in their sexual experience when they're in a committed married relationship. Sociologically, that's the truth. And then through these verses, we're reminded that our confession of love ought not to be flippant words or casual actions. Rather, our expression ought to carry weight. See, it's deep and unrelenting and permanent. Love is as strong as death. So I was thinking of this song when I heard that. That's how permanent and important love is, that they do anything even to death for that. And so our third one is love's passion. Here's what she says next. Our love, it burns like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot sweep it away. Oh, I love this verse. This verse is like, man, it's so poetic and cool and like powerful sounding. And this idea that love is like a fire with great power and usefulness for good, but also for destruction. We mentioned it a little bit last week. Love has lifted some people to great heights, but it has also consumed and destroyed people and turned them to complete ash. There's an interesting linguistic possibility with the words here that we can't see it in English, where he says, it burns like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. And this mighty flame, it has, in Hebrew, it has the ending, da-da-da-da, Yah. And anytime they say Yah, they're referring to Yahweh or God. And so it has this possibility that the author is actually indicating that the love that's the most powerful is a one that comes from the flame of God, or it's a God's flamed love. And so this idea that this appropriate passionate sexual love is actually from God and inflamed by God and created to be the most powerful, because like Yahweh being the highest possible creation of something. And so he said, she's saying like, that's what our love is, like this God love. And it's not second to the world, or it's not second to Romeo and Juliet. It wasn't written at this time, but it's not second to that. Godly love is paramount. It's like better than anything the world has to offer. And we got to step into that and embrace that and believe that, but also share that with the world. Hey, God has an incredible, passionate plan for your love life. And it will be incredibly joyful and amazing and wonderful if you'll just listen to his plan for it. Passionate, powerful, sometimes terrifying. But isn't that the truth of how love feels? And like love, when you're in love, it's like raging and it's on the edge of like destruction kind of, and it's almost out of control and it feels like it's going to consume you. And when you're in love, it's hard to concentrate on other kind of things. That kind of love can't be doused. Love's this raging fire that cannot be extinguished. Therefore, one must take careful care how, where, and with whom that spark of love is ignited. If it's this powerful, like a burning flame, you better be careful with where you light that up. When I was about 6 years old, my brother and I, my brother's a little older, he was 8 or 9, and we were out in, we lived in Hacienda Heights, La Habra Heights, and back then it was really undeveloped, and so there were big hillsides of grass, and this is Southern California summer, and all the grass was dried out over knee-high, waist-high, because I was little at the time, and my brother, he had got a hold of a pack of matches, and our house sat at the top of this hill, and then it was just a small little cabin, and there was a whole a valley that went down to some other houses, probably about 4 or 5 acres of dry brush grass, and my brother, he had some matches, and he had learned that matches light things on fire, and it's pretty fun. And so we were out, now I was 5 or 6, I didn't know too much about fire or whatever, and my brother's like, check this out. He lit a match. I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. Got some of the blades of the grass, and he lit them. And then, oh, I was like, that's even cooler because they got bigger, right, the flame. And I was like, wow, that is kind of cool. And then he's like, yeah, watch this. So he got on the ground, and then he said, I'll light this fire. Now, my brother isn't always the clearest thinker, and that's his just reality. And he was 8, and he didn't understand about clearing brush if you're going to start a fire or the proper fire safety, none of that. And so he decided to just light this fire right here on the grass. We were pretty far away from the house. So he lights this little fire, and it's about like this big, this tiny little fire, and then it's like this big. And I was like, ooh. And then it was like this big, and I was like, Dean, I think you should probably put the fire out. And he's like, well, don't worry. I'm a Cub Scout. And I was like, oh, okay. And then the fire was like this big, right? Now it's like bigger than we are. And then my brother screams, hit it with your shirt. So I take off my shirt. I'm 5 or 6 years old, and now I'm just fanning the flames because I'm not putting them out, right? I don't have enough weight or shirt to put out any flames. So now our flames are now maybe 2 people wide. I'm fanning them, right? I don't know where my brother, I think he screamed and ran away. I'm fanning the flames. We both run and hide because you know how much trouble you're going to get if you burn down a hillside. We both run, and this fire, boom, goes out of control. This burns our entire hillside down. The fire department came. Luckily, no one's houses were burned. They were far enough away. This time, it wasn't a ton of development. And so, but the entire hillside, the ravine, all up to our property, the next neighbor's property who had cut their brush, like it didn't burn out any houses and no one died. Thank the Lord. And then, then we got a little whooping for that one. And I was like, it wasn't my fault. Why am I getting a whooping? And I still got whooped anyway just because I was there. And I was like, that was a beginning of a different story of like, why? That's not fair, God. You know, like so. But that's what fire out of control is like. Like it could just burn down that whole mess. That was definitely not the right situation to spark that fire, right? If you wanted to play with fire, you want to teach your kid about fire, probably in a campfire setting, in a fireplace, the right place and time to enjoy fire, that wasn't it. And our God-given sexual passion is similar. Like God wants you, he knows it is going to blaze. It is going to be this incredible, passionate fire. So be careful where you light that fire. So it doesn't cause destruction, rather it causes something amazing. A healthy, committed marriage is the best scenario to light that fire in. And so I was thinking about this song for that. That's right. That's one of my faves there, Social Distortion. I was going to put the old one, but that's a remake, but the old one's so country and boring sounding, so I went with the Social Distortions. But they're local, too. They're California, right? Johnny Cash? Yeah, Johnny Cash is like my grandpa-like, so whoever shouted that over there. So that's Love's Passion. Our last one this morning is Love's Value. She continues on and say this: if one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned. So this is saying, like, you don't have enough money to buy love. And if you tried to, that would be you would be looked at like an idiot. That kind of offer would be scorned because love is priceless. No amount of money could buy the kind of godly love that we've been talking about. Love can't be bought or sold. It's not a piece of merchandise. Therefore, love must be appreciated for its great value and not taken for granted. Since you can't buy it and it is priceless, if you get it, you've got to be careful with it and you've got to cherish it and not take it for granted. In our culture and time, it seems often that sexuality is treated so cheaply. It's of so little value. It's given to some stranger at a club or a swipe left or a swipe right or given away to a college girlfriend or maybe a work fling. Sex can be had for the price of a few drinks, or it could be abused for free through online pornography, something like that. Here's a truth. Sex can be bought, but love must be given. The thing we're talking about must be given. This verse reminds us that the love isn't measured in dollars. In fact, to do so would bring about scorn, because that would reduce love to a transaction and the other person to an object. And that idea is utterly repulsive, and it's rejected. And a person who thinks like that, even here, is saying that person ought to be scorned, because by its very nature, love's got to be freely given, which is one of the incredible, powerful things about sex and marriage. It isn't just sex. It's the expression of a genuine, committed, God-honoring love, and it's more valuable than any possession. Love is priceless. Here's its song for this one. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. Buy me love. That's right, can't buy me love. So we've seen love is guaranteed, love is permanent, love is valuable. And what was our other one? Forgot it real fast. Guaranteed. That went well. Oh, and passionate. So I got a homework assignment for all of you married couples. Tomorrow's Valentine's Day, and I'm going to ask that everybody who's listening that you actually do your homework. I know this is a pretty studious group, so I think that you'll follow through on your homework assignment. And here's what I'd like to ask you to do in the name of the Lord. Amen. Okay, I'd like you to, tomorrow on Valentine's Day, grab your Bibles, and I'd like you to get with your partner, and I'd like you to read your parts like it's a script, the Song of Songs, to one another. So men, take Solomon's line. Women, you're going to take the bride's line. And just read the book together to one another, and actually out loud, not just side-by-side reading, but read it out loud, taking your parts like it's a little bit of a play. And this is going to bring about a couple of blessings. The first is it's going to be wonderfully spiritual, because you're going to be reading the Bible together that's incredibly spiritual, reading the Bible together on Valentine's Day. And the second is it's going to be really silly, fun, and wonderfully awkward, I hope. I hope that you get to experience some of the awkward that I've been experiencing for the last few weeks. And so, which is that wonderful awkwardness, that's spiritual as well. And reading the Bible, we say, oh yeah, of course that's spiritual. But you know what? Saying love words to one another, that's spiritual also. But that homework is only for married couples. If you're not married, do not do this with your girlfriend. Do not. You are igniting that fire. You are my brother out on the field if you're doing that. Do not. That is some potent love song, so don't use it yet. So if you're still single, if you're not yet married, I have homework for you as well. I'm going to give you this idea, this homework, that I want you to read the book of Song of Songs. It takes about 15 minutes as your homework on Valentine's as well. But as you do it, I'd like you to grab your Bibles, read the entire book of Song of Songs as a prayer for what you would like your future marriage to look like. So I want you to go into this book prayerfully and say, God, I want this kind of marriage. I want a marriage that looks like this. And then prayerfully look forward to the future. You know, so many times the church says like, oh, just don't, sex bad, bad, bad. But it's not. It's something incredible. And I want you to read the book of Song of Songs and say, God, that's what I want. I want that burning passion that's permanent, that is valuable, God. That is what I want. And so, singles, I want to ask you to do that. Now, there may be a couple of persons, either online or maybe here, who feel like they've been given the spiritual gift of singleness. We talked about that a little bit. That has got to be a God-given specific gift for you. And if that's you, then I would like you tomorrow on Valentine to read the book of Song of Songs. You see where I'm going here. Everyone gets to read it. And I'd like you to prayerfully bless those that you know who are married. So you may have the gift of singleness. If God calls you to that specific gift, then I want you to read this and pray that book over the married couples that you know. Because we all know some married. Pray that book over those who are going to be married one day. And rejoice with those who rejoice. Hi, guys. We'll let them in. That's like kidnapping. That aren't our kids, so we're not going to let them in. But you can say hi or something. Right. Well, like that, I think you can. What a fantastic way to end this perfect sermon series. The one major thing, look, that I hope that God would do for the last 4 weeks, I had one desire. My main desire is that our friends that are in married relationships, that you would see that as this wonderful passionate opportunity, that God would spark re-spark a romantic passion for one another in your married relationship. That's the first thing. And the other thing that I was hoping to accomplish through this time is that the church would, and that you would realize, and those that are even single would realize, that God has something powerful and amazing for you in sexuality. It's not dirty, bad, or wrong. God created sex to be used at the right time in the right place. And so, thank you, Lord, for giving us the book of Song of Songs. We're going to stand together right now, and we're going to lift up a worship to God, the giver of all good things.